Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Chicago's Afternoon News, 720 WGN. Carm, this your song or what? His arms are waving. He's almost dancing in his chair.
I wasn't fully aware I was being watched. But yes, I love the Go-Go's. Come on, vacation, let's go. Who doesn't love it?
This is Chicago's Afternoon News. That's Mark Carman. He is in for Kevin Powell today. Steve Bertrand is with us. Mary Vandeveld. I'm Lisa Dent. George Will is on the phone. If you missed last night's January 6th committee hearings, then you missed Congressman Bernie Thompson. Bernie represents the 2nd District of Mississippi. represents the 2nd District of Mississippi. He is the chairman of the committee. This is what he had to say.
I was born, raised, and still live in Bolton, Mississippi, a town with a population of 521, which is midway between Jackson and Vicksburg, Mississippi, and the Mississippi River. I'm from a part of the country where people justify the actions of slavery, the Ku Klux Klan, and lynching. I'm reminded of that dark history as I hear voices today try and justify the actions of the insurrectionists on January 6th, 2021.
George Will is a senior political contributor at News Nation, but so much more. I appreciated your article today in the Washington Post and the history that you put before us. Was it important that Benny shared that part of his history last night, George?
I think so, because this is a strange hearing in the sense that it's not really a hearing. They didn't convene to hear things. They convened to tell things. It was a congressional telling. And it's telling the country something that Congress thinks the country ought to hear. That's a legitimate function. Some people say the only legitimate congressional hearings are about some future legislative outcome. I disagree with that. I think there are moments, the Warren Commission after the Kennedy assassination was another, where the object of the hearing is public education, and that's perfectly suitable.
As you pointed out, the committee's first and most important and sufficient task is to show what happened. In my opinion, I think they did a good job of that last night.
I do, too. And by show, I meant show. I meant graphic journalism. The fact is that everyone there, the rioters, the police, the journalists, everyone in America practically is carrying a video camera in their pocket or their purse in the form of a smartphone. As a result, we often have a surfeit of riveting graphic presentations of the world around us. Americans, since the coming of television in 70 years ago, Americans have become used to getting most of their information through pictures. And so if you're going to communicate with them, you better have pictures, and indeed the committee did.
Absolutely. So what do you think will happen over the course of the next hearings that will be televised? Their job is not to change people's minds. It's to tell the story. Do you think they will accomplish that?
I think they will by going backwards. Usually you start with small evidence and build to the climax of what happened. We know what happened. We saw it on television on the afternoon of January 6th. So they are taking January 6th as a given, and I think in the next hearings they're going to work backward to explain how so many people got to Washington, who organized them, did anyone pay them, what are the consequences and the legal ramifications. Again, in the Watergate hearings 49 summers ago, the great question as posed by Tennessee Republican Senator Howard Baker was, what did the president know and when did he know it? They were trying to find out. And in their search for answers, they came up with things like the existence of the presidential Oval Office taping system. That's not what this committee is doing on about January 6th. Again, we know the destination. It was the Capitol riot. Now we're working backward to the cause. And that, I think, is going to be interesting and, I suspect, profoundly embarrassing to some people who are going to be seen to have enabled and abetted all this.
George, I was struck by the video deposition from, well, Bill Barr and other aides and people in the DOJ about what they told the president about voter fraud and the lack of any evidence of it as it compared to what the president was saying publicly. And I'm glad you're here because it seemed to me like there were pretty damning accusations about that. And I wonder how that ranks for you historically when it compared to Watergate, or was it President Tyler who actually sided with the Confederacy or others? I mean, where does this, if this is true and provable, where does this fit in?
Well, it's a demonstration of an aspect of Mr. Trump that we've known about for some while, which is when he wants to believe something, no onslaught of counter evidence is going to change his mind about it. Remember this. Before the November election in 2020, he was planting the predicate for objecting to the result. He kept saying, on election night, I'm going to jump out ahead, and then you're going to see fraud and abuse and cheating whittle away my lead. What he knew was, and everyone knew, was that Trump voters were less likely than other voters to vote absentee. And so as the absentee ballots were counted, his lead would shrink. But what he did was preemptively plant the seed of doubt in the public mind by saying, this is inherently sinister, what you're going to be seeing.
I get that, but in the history of presidential wrongdoing or malfeasance, where does this rank?
It ranks off the charts. I mean, it's not on any continuum that I can think of. I mean, where in a ransack American history, how you will not find an occasion where a president says, perhaps my vice president deserves to be hanged. I mean, how do you go about saying what that's comparable to? It's comparable to nothing.
And when you look at history, has there ever been a point where there is a good percentage of people who will not believe anything that was presented last night?
No, and that is exactly what's alarming and frightening about our current position. About 70% of self-described Republicans believe the election was stolen. This in spite of the fact that the president's record in these court challenges is something like 0 wins and 62 losses. The fact that there's been no evidence for this makes no difference to people who are determined to believe it. What this indicates is that one person with a big enough megaphone saying the same thing over and over again is going to get a lot of people to believe it, whether or not there's evidence for it.
I know we're just about out of time, but I want to ask you something I didn't understand. I think it was Congresswoman Cheney referred to a judge sitting in California who said that in one or two occasions there was enough evidence to indicate that the president and others might have broken a law. Do you know? Can you explain what that was about?
I do not know what that was about. I think there is. My suspicion is a judge was suggesting that there was a filing of frivolous lawsuits, baseless lawsuits, which itself is a legal offense.
We sincerely appreciate you joining us on Chicago's Afternoon News. We encourage everybody to go read the article that you wrote that is on the Washington Post, and we thank you for your service to News Nation.
Glad to be with you. Glad to be with it. Thanks.
George Will on Chicago's Afternoon News. Steve has your news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. WGN.